Welcome to the Post-Christian Podcast. My name is Eric Bryant. I'm one of the executive pastors at Gateway in Austin, Texas. My foundation exists to equip and empower church leaders in reaching new people and raising up leaders. I'm the author of Not Like Me and Fruitful, Becoming Who God Created You to Be. Join me on social media for Through the New Testament for Skeptics and Seekers. And be sure to sign up for my email newsletter where you can receive free resources at ericbryant.org. On today's episode of the Post-Christian Podcast, I have with me a pastor from Canada, Chris Quiring. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great, Eric. How are you?
Doing really well. We have a mutual friend in Greg Atkinson, and even our visit just before this interview, finding out there's a lot in common we have as you're serving in Canada. I've been in Seattle, now Austin, with LA in between. But talk about what your ministry is like in Dresden Community Church. We'll talk about a little bit about what it's like trying to reach out to folks in Canada.
For sure. The way I always try and describe it is that what you would consider to be normally West Coast kind of Christianity, not so much California, but north of that in Seattle, is a lot like what Canada is like. The number of Christians per capita here is I would say like church going Christians is about 10% or less. And that's divided between Catholics and evangelicals. So the numbers are nowhere near. The skepticism up north is quite a bit higher than the Bible Belt in the States. And it's a beautiful place to minister. Love the people. But every year I notice culture further and further away from biblical Christianity. And so it's a challenge to bridge that gap where there was a time people would at least have the building blocks to understand the salvation message. Now it just seems like you got to start from ground zero.
Yes, it is a lot like that. Even being here in Austin, you know, there's certainly post-Christian, you know, they grew up maybe with some church and walked away from it. But more and more, it feels like it was actually grandparents that walked away from it, or it's never been a part of their family. And certainly with folks immigrating from India or California for us here in Austin, there are a lot of folks that you're trying to build relationship. And even a search for God or what they believe God to be is very, very different. What about, keep going. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say, Tim Keller used to say that back in the day, all you had to do as a pastor was connect the dots. Everybody had a certain set of data points and understandings. We're broken. We need help. Or there's a guilt inside. I need to get rid of it. And your job as a pastor was to go and just connect the dots for them. And he said in the new world before he passed that we live in now, nobody has those dots anymore. So you're starting from emotions or felt needs or incongruities with the world that you're trying to help them understand that this is why you don't feel at peace inside or with each other. It's a totally different plan of attack. And I find that when I preach, I preach with a lot of stories. I find so much inspiration in Jesus's parables that I find story is almost the vehicle that I connect with those outside the church more than anything with.
You know, it's a wonderful way to describe it. I think there is this sense of helping people discover or acknowledge these internal soul cravings is what Irwin used to call it. That can be met in a relationship with God. You've written a book, The Lies That Bind Us. Talk about these lies. What are some of these lies that might be an avenue towards, you know, sharing about hope? Talk a little bit about your book.
So I wrote a book this past year, 2023, super excited about it. You're right, called The Lies That Bind. The book came from this conviction I have. I've always been enamored by Jesus's promise that we will have life and life to the full, that we will live this thing called the abundant life. The thing that I found, especially through COVID, is how many Christians just weren't living it. I would come to church on Sunday or I'd meet during the week with them. And you have these people with the singularly greatest promises in the world from Jesus, and they're just trapped. They're stalled out. They're stuck. And so there was this gap, this dissonance between the promise of Jesus and the life that my people were living. And I was just drawn into trying to figure out, what is that? Why is there such a gap between this abundant life promise and the everyday lives that most of the people I know are living? And what I came to realize as I watched people come in for counseling and talk about all the things they were struggling with is there was a pattern. It wasn't just random. It wasn't just isolated things, that there was a pattern. And I could trace so many of the things that they were struggling with down to a lie that they had believed somewhere along the way. They thought it was just behaviors. They thought it was just broken relationships. They thought it was just temptation. But each and every one of those things, if you sat there for a moment and traced it back, you could find a lie that they believed underneath. And so I was drawn to write about that in that book, about that search, about the promise for abundant life, and why so many of us just aren't experiencing it. And so I spent a few chapters kind of sketching that out. I use this thing called identify, trace, and replace. It's kind of a pattern throughout the book. It's the superstructure that it's written on. And if we keep our eyes open and use this thing called discernment, we can start to identify all of the lies that the enemy has woven into our everyday lives. And so I often tell people, when it comes to the fight with your spouse on the way to church, or the tension at home, or the reason why you can't stop picking up that Ben and Jerry's at night when you sit down before bed, you can trace those everyday weaknesses and habits to a lie that we have believed. And so that's the heart of this book and where I came from and why I start writing it. And so I talk about stuff like division. I mean, I remember a moment in the middle of COVID where I looked around and I just realized the enemy was having a heyday with churches, left and right and center, split down the middle, torn apart. And so I started to dig into why. What lie are we believing that is completely tearing apart the unity of the body of Jesus? And I started to realize that we've started believing this lie. The chapter on division is all about, if you don't agree with me, you're my enemy. It's this conviction that we've picked up along the way. It's not biblical. Biblically, Jesus promises us that we are his church. And if we stand united, even the gates of hell won't prevail against us. But somewhere along the way, we've decided that what you believe about this tangential issue or this political moment, that is a reason for us to be enemies instead of friends. And so if you don't agree with me, you're my enemy. And I started to pull that apart and realize that if we could just open our eyes, so many broken relationships would come back together. And I started to trace that through other areas of life. So many of us struggle with low self-esteem. And I think if you were to trace that back, you could trace it back to a place in time where we believed a lie that somebody else spoke over us. I remember when I was in grade school, I was up front in front of the class. The teacher wanted me to be the kind of scriber for all the homework. And I remember writing down on the board everything he was saying. And he kept trying to tell me to do something right. And I kept getting it wrong. And then he would tell me again, no, I want you to do this. And then I would write it down wrong. And we went through this kind of dance for a little while. And then I remember, it's like the earliest memory I have. I remember him staring at me, and in front of the whole class, he looks at me and says, Chris, you know what? You're a brilliant kid, but you have no common sense. I remember that just sunk right to the depths of my heart. And for the next 10 years of my life, I just assumed that I could do the hard things in life, but I couldn't do the easy stuff because I had simply believed a lie. It's like he had just taken a name tag and stuck it to my chest. No common sense. And that's who I was. And it took me a long time to unwind that and realize that I am who God says I am, not what the other people in my life say about me. And so it was just, so there's 10 different chapters in the book, kind of working through those different elements about where have we allowed lies to creep past our defenses and sneak into our souls, and what kind of poison are they kind of seeping out into our lives? And so that's the heart of the book, as we go through the 10 most popular and cogent lies that I think are attacking followers of Jesus these days.
Yeah. Yeah. In addition to division, you talk about the lie of deception, the lie of fear, the lie of accusation, discouragement, distraction, passivity, temptation, even unforgiveness and pride. What are some of the other insights that if a believer or a church leader who's trying to help someone who's struggling just grabbed a hold of, it could make all the difference? Maybe give another story or two.
Yeah, for sure. So temptation, if you want a universal way to understand this, everybody knows what temptation feels like. Everybody has been in a situation where they knew they shouldn't do this, but they opted to instead because the voice of the enemy was just louder than the voice of God in their hearts or their conscience. I can remember when I was a teenager, I had a really good friend who was really wealthy. His family had a house, 4 stories tall, 2 staircases, sat on 8 city lots along the river. Like, they weren't exactly roughing it.
Wow.
And one day they asked me to go and run an errand for them, and they handed me their Visa. This wasn't one of those regular kind of visas. This was like one of those platinum cards that shimmers in the sunlight. And I remember I forgot to give it back. And later that night, I was just hanging out in a parking lot. And all of a sudden, I opened up my wallet and I found that visa that I didn't realize was there. All my friends started to gather around. And you ever see those pictures with a demon on one shoulder and an angel on the other kind of duking it out? Well, I have four guys on my shoulder telling me, let's go buy a pizza. No, let's buy two. Let's go to Dairy Queen. And I mean, you could tell we weren't criminal masterminds. That was about as big as our aspirations went. And I remember that moment in the way that it's similar to so many other moments in my life, is that when you get to that point of believing that voice that says that this is worth it, what you're doing is you're basically saying that God doesn't want what's best for me. This is the lie that you're believing. Every single time that you give into temptation, the enemy has not just convinced you that this is fun or enjoyable. That lie has gotten so deep that you've decided that God fenced this off and he doesn't really want what's best for me. I know what's better, so I'm going to go ahead and do this anyways. And you can trace that through Joseph's story. You can trace that through so many stories, David's experiences about how temptation works and how to fight back against it. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you boil it down, and at the heart of it is a lie that God doesn't want what's best for you. It's the same lie that Eve and Adam believed in the garden. And so when you're dealing with somebody at your church who's been giving in to the same temptation over and over again, sometimes I tell them, try and remember tomorrow, today. Remember that this is just a flash in the pan. It's like a promise in the year of election. But at the end of the day, God does want what's best for you. And if you are willing to submit yourself to his plan for your life, you will experience the untold blessing that he has for you. And so temptation, like I said, ultimately boils down to a lie that we believe. Fear is the same way. When you're dealing with fear, we think it's just we're scared of something. But no, at the end of the day, we've bought into the lie that whatever this is bigger than God. It could be a health issue that you're facing, some sort of issue at work. It could be a job loss, the economy, whatever it is. But at the end of the day, you're still facing that same lie that somehow this thing is magnified in your life so much that it has taken the place of God. And it is bigger in your vision than the God that you claim to serve. And so part of that problem and process is identifying that lie and replacing it with the truth that there is nothing bigger nor stronger, nothing more omnipotent nor omniscient than your Heavenly Father. And there's a displacing element to that fear.
So good, Chris. I really appreciate so much of what you're sharing. I want to encourage folks to pick up the book, The Lies That Bind. In fact, your website, Chris Quiring, ChrisQuiring.org or com?
Com, you got it.
.com. I want to encourage you to go take a look. And actually, it's a great book, I think, for small groups, for a sermon series. And thank you for giving away a couple copies to some of our lucky readers of the newsletter. You can sign up for it, ericbryant.org. Thank you so much, Chris. Keep up the great work there in Canada, and we'd love to have you again in the future.
That sounds great. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it so much.
Thanks for joining us on the Post Christian Podcast. More resources available at ericbryant.org.